Welcome everybody to episode 96 of High Tech on the Low. Owen, how are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very, very good. Everyone, we're sitting here with Owen Freund, co-founder and CEO of Wilco, which we're going to get into the world of Wilco and development and all that fun stuff in a little bit. But as always, we are sponsored by Front Team with 12 different communities, 6 verticals, and 3,000 members looking to connect. And as always, if you like what you hear on this episode, give us a like, subscribe, view, whatever it is. We want to have it. So as always, Owen, really good to have you on the show. I'm really glad that we were finally able to have you here too after some scheduling issues. So it's good on our end. You know, I think the real thing I just want to know from you to get started here and to kind of set the tone for everything is, you know, what is Wilco? What are you guys doing? And kind of tell everyone why, in a sense, you felt the need to start Wilco.
Cutting straight to the chase. I love it.
You know what? We're going to get into it, you know?
So Wilco is kind of like a flight simulator, but for software instead of aviation.
That's amazing.
So developers...
Sold. Where do I sign?
Trywilco.com.
Yeah, right. There you go.
So developers don't really have a good way to practice. They practice on the job. Mm-hmm. But when you gain experience on the job, it's A, very slow.
Sure.
You know, people can only practice what they actually encounter.
Sure.
It's very error-prone because people make catastrophic mistakes.
Sure.
And it doesn't provide equal opportunity because so much depends on the team you get to, the type of mentors you have access to, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So Wilco is this fantasy company that you can join. And it's...
Amazing. I like the fantasy company that you can join as a developer.
As a developer,
yeah. It doesn't exist yet, guys. No, I'm joking.
It does exist. And it has a production-like system with logging and monitoring and analytics and load balancing and a real data set. But more importantly, colleagues and team leads... and DevOps people and support people. And on top of that, you go on what we call quests.
Okay.
And a quest could be,
so
hey, Jordan.
So gamified development system.
Totally.
Okay.
And a quest could be, hey, Jordan, we have a performance problem in production. Please figure out what happened. What's the root cause? What's the extent of the damage? Fix it and communicate it to stakeholders.
And what do I get?
You get, first of all, gratification.
Okay.
Satisfaction.
Right, right.
You get points.
You also get to learn.
You get to learn.
Sure.
You get will coins that you can also redeem for swag and stuff like that.
Nice, nice.
But more importantly, you gain experience.
Okay. And like in that sense, when I'm kind of going through these quests, is the goal kind of coming from you guys as Wilco saying, this is what's relevant today in the development sphere? Or is it customized for each kind of development team? So for example, you know, a company working, let's say, on, you know, cloud computing or something like that might have different kind of needs than someone who's working on, you know, a mobile gaming app?
It's a great question, and it's a combination of a few different factors.
Okay.
So first of all, we have our own catalog that we've built based on the things that we deem important.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because it happened to us at Wilco internally.
Sure.
maybe because based on our past, we think it's an interesting topic to cover or to gain experience with. And then on top of that, you get the community that's also building quests.
Okay.
You know, just people from the community building their own quests to show off their skills or whatever.
Are they Wilco workers or
No. Just people.
So it could be me, it could be you, it could be anyone else.
Could be anyone else.
Okay.
It's free to create quests as long as they're publicly available.
Oh, very cool. So it's like an open source kind of quest game, like helping developer game. Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, why, you know, did you start this? You know,
wait, let me just finish up on the previous question.
Sure.
So apart from what the community is building, there's also companies that sell to developers that have built content on top of our platform. And that way, you know, if you want to learn observability or practice observability, we have quests graded by New Relic. So you know you're getting, you know, the quests that were written by the top experts in the field.
Mm.
We have quests by CircleCI, by Docker, Armory, Mixpanel.
Okay.
Et
cetera, so you guys are having some of the big guys in the field also kind of provide you guys a certain level of content,
gameability. Exactly. Okay. And that means for you as an engineer, if you want to practice and you want to practice, like I said, observability or CI/CD or containers or whatever, you get really top content from the experts in the field.
Very cool.
And then last but not least, if you're a company and you want to build quests for your own internal use, you can do that too. You can even hook up different repos than the fantasy company's repo.
Interesting. Okay, so you guys kind of provide a very big, I guess you could say, ecosystem for developers to kind of work their game, work their magic.
Exactly. It's a platform.
Right.
And anyone can build on top of it, whether it's something that you want to expose to the world or whether it's something that you just want to do internally if you're a company. You know, there's a lot of things happening in an engineer's lifetime.
Right.
Onboarding, joining the on-call rotation.
Sure.
Promotions, sure. Switching teams, et cetera, et cetera. You can have quests for all of these so that people are going through this internal certification
right.
Type of program.
Do you have like non-devs also who are using it at sometimes and kind of trying to understand, I guess, the world of the dev space a little bit more?
We do. It is mostly geared towards developers. Mm-hmm. But being an open platform, you're bound to see quests that, you know, don't really leverage code in any way.
Right.
And it's okay because we also believe that code is not the most important skill for developers.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially in today's world with, you know, AI and generative AI and low code and no code platforms. Being an engineer doesn't mean writing code.
Right.
There are so many other soft and hard skills that you need to master to 100%. Be good at what you do.
Yeah, I think that's also important sometimes to recognize, right? That, you know, code is important and it definitely important, right? You know, no one's going to say not, but there are other kind of factors in the dev process that are, in a sense, I wouldn't say necessarily no code, right? But are code less, you know, or a little less on the code side. So for sure. Now, I'm going to go back to what I wanted to ask you before, which is kind of like, why did you start this? Because in a certain, you know, sense, it can kind of, you know, make a lot of sense, I guess, to kind of try to provide simulation platforms for developers and things like that. But there are other solutions, you know, kind of out there on the market. So what made you want to start this and kind of even create, I would say, the kind of game network of the developers?
Sure. So I spent most of my career in engineering management.
Okay.
And I was constantly looking for ways for my engineers to practice their craft, to become better at what they do. And the amazing thing is engineers already have this intrinsic motivation to get better.
Sure.
But I was looking to support them on it. And
are you an engineer or are you just in the management of them?
I'm formerly an engineer.
Okay.
I still write code, some open source and stuff like that.
Sure.
But, you know, I don't professionally write code for a few years now.
Okay.
You know, sometimes I personally don't think you need to be a good engineer to be a good engineering manager. But some people do think, and it's really hard to get ahead and find good management positions without being a good engineer beforehand.
Interesting. Okay.
Unjustifiably so, in my view. Anyway, so looking for ways for engineers to upskill, and then I thought to myself, what if I let engineers join this class where they get exposed to simulations of real-world events?
Okay.
And I tried to pitch it to a few boot camps, and they all said, this is great, but we're focused on 0 to 1. We don't care about the 1 to 100 range.
Right. We're trying to get people started, not trying to get them refined.
Exactly. Right? Okay, exactly. And sure. I'm like, all right, they're already engineers. You know, they've learned the basics.
And they still need help.
And they still need help. Okay. And it doesn't matter. Even if they have 20 years of experience, they still need to practice.
100%.
It's
like that kind of continued learning type of stuff that they have in a lot of other fields, right?
You know, exactly.
Like the lawyers or accountants or whatever, they have to go through it. So you're saying engineers too. You
know, exactly.
This isn't just like learning on your own.
And I mentioned the flight simulator earlier.
Which I love, by the way. I think that's I hope you use that in every sales pitch, you know?
I do.
Okay, good.
So pilots use the simulator, and it doesn't matter if they have 20 years of experience
right.
and how many hours of flight they're logging per week or a month or whatever. They still need to go through the simulator because a real flight is mostly boring, to be honest.
Sure.
And it doesn't prepare you for, you know, that time you need to land on the Hudson, for example.
Exactly.
So I wanted engineers to practice, couldn't find anything like that, pitched it to a few boot camps. Mm-hmm. They all threw me down the stairs. And then in 2020, I left WeWork at the end of 2020, and I said to myself, this is it. I'm going to start this school I've been talking about for a few years now. But I already knew what I was going to do. I was actually becoming a VC.
Okay.
So all I wanted to do was start this school, get it to break even, have someone manage the daily operations, and that's it. So I reached out to a former colleague of mine from the WeWork days and, you know, pitched him this idea and wanted to get him involved.
Right.
And he told me that I'm stupid.
That's the greatest impetus, though, to start a business, right? You know, telling someone you're stupid, really? I'll show you, you know.
Well, I asked him why, and he said, well, you're not really making a dent in the universe, you know, with 6 to 8 students you'll get per class. Let's figure out a scalable way to solve this.
Okay.
And by the way, another former colleague of ours, who's also a good friend, is thinking about the same space. So let's get the three of us together.
And start putting our brains together.
And exactly. And brainstorm this. So we got together.
Uh-huh.
And we started talking, and then we realized, you know, we came up with this flight simulator analogy, and we realized this has to be fun for developers to like this. Okay. Developers hate top-down e-learning, whatever right. you want to call those systems, right?
Well, I think we all kind of do in a certain sense, too, because when you're just learning, you're just sitting there. You're not really like, yes, you're getting value, but it's hard to kind of know the value you're getting when it's just like, you know, one of those videos where it's like, are you still listening?
Yeah, you know, right? Exactly. You know? And you're watching this video and, you know, as engineers, we were always looking for ways to hack those systems, right? So you realize that if you open Chrome developer tools, you can get it to run twice as fast.
Right.
Or maybe even fast forward the video all the way instead of having to watch it.
Or put yourself as though you're there, even though you're not, right?
Yeah, but then those systems, like if the window loses focus, the video stops.
Right.
So you have to, you know, find a way to trick it into not noticing it loses focus, etc. So we didn't want to be one of those, right? We wanted to be fun. And we also realized that this really caters to any experience level. And, you know, one of my co-founders, Shem, our CTO, has been an engineer for the past 15, 16 years. Has done everything, small companies, Facebook, startups that were acquired by larger companies, et cetera.
So he's kind of been, he's run the gamut of startup world, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. He's done everything.
Yeah.
And he still needs to practice.
Right.
So we wanted to build something that, you know, caters to all experience levels.
That's amazing, though. Because that's like something that people don't really think about. You know what I mean? Really, like, think about that. That guy, a lot of people who are non, you know, experts at this field would look at, you know, Shem and be like, you don't need practice. You're telling everyone else what to do. You know, come on. But like you're saying, hey, no, Shem needs to practice just as much as, you know, I need to practice, right? It's a real thing.
Exactly. And it's actually harder. The more experienced you are, the harder it is to find opportunities to practice because you're basically doing the same thing all the time, right? You know, been there, done that. So, you know, as an experienced developer, you've been through everything, or at least everything that you'll encounter realistically. And you've been there, done that. And the only way for you to practice is, in many cases, to switch teams or even to switch companies.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I'm speaking to senior developers who say, I love the company. The people are amazing. The product's awesome. But I'm leaving.
Kind of like, why? Because they reach like a glass ceiling, kind of? Like they don't know where to go anymore?
Exactly. And I'm like, why? Yeah. We've reached a glass ceiling, not from a promotion perspective.
Right.
But from a development perspective, a self-development perspective, we can't find any opportunities to pick up something new, to practice something new.
Right.
And then we're going to leave to a company that we know we're going to like less.
Right.
And we know that within 2 to 3 years, we're going to be in exactly the same spot and have to leave again. And I'm like,
but this time I'll have more tools, quote unquote. Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, why don't we give them a way to practice without having to, you know, join a different company? Why don't we give them a way to practice in the company that they're already in?
So that's like a big kind of human resources play then in much more, in many ways, like, because it's kind of you saying, okay, let's focus kind of on retaining talent, improving our talent, and making our talent the best in the world so that once again, we get more people coming in, right? You know, at the end of the day.
Exactly. It's a cycle.
Right. 100%. Like, do you sell it then as an HR kind of tool, or how do you sell it?
So mostly it's for engineering teams, and usually the people we speak to are from the engineering team. And the biggest selling point for them is to be able to train their people in an interactive, fun and interactive way instead of watching videos.
Sure.
And that training could be the generic upskilling type of training. It could be stuff that's related to what they need to achieve. Like I mentioned earlier, onboarding, joining the on-call rotation, any of those scenarios. Right. So it could be anything. And then an added benefit is you'll probably retain talent better. And you'll have talent wanting to join you.
Sure.
There's this famous comic strip that I saw a few years ago where one person is saying, you know, what if we invest in people's growth and they leave?
Okay.
And the other person is saying, what if we don't invest and they stay? So, it you know, you really want to invest in people. You don't want to get people who are stuck in the same place, even if they end up staying.
Right.
It's probably not the best talent you can have.
Right. It's also, you're kind of also not maximizing your talent, right? So, which is also kind of the problem in that space, 100%. Now, you know, one of the things that's very interesting here is you said that you were originally going down the path when you left WeWork to be a VC.
Yeah.
Right? And so what changed there to kind of say, you know, no, screw it. Don't want to invest. Don't want to deal with that. I'm going to build a, you know, quote unquote, a engineering academy that later turned into an engineering solution, right? That, what was the kind of like the change in your mindset there?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I did become a VC.
Okay.
And, you know, when we first brainstormed about Wilco, we brainstormed as a side project. None of us were about to become startup founders.
Okay.
This wasn't the path that we planned out for us. So
it was totally like kind of like really just a side hobby. Like,
yeah, we think this thing needs to exist.
So let's build it.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, that's how engineers think,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
So, you know, Shem was at Facebook at the time, and Alon was a freelancer who was swamped with work.
Okay.
And I was becoming a VC.
Right.
But we were just running this on the side. And okay. Then, you know, I became a VC. I was there for a few months. And at some point, I just realized Wilco is my real passion.
Interesting.
This is what I want to do. And Shem and Alon also realized that a bit earlier than I did, probably a month or two earlier than I did.
And pushed, then we all pushed you to leave the VC world.
Okay. Yeah. And then we all quit and started doing Wilco full time.
Nice. And so did you, I have to ask, did you invest in yourself?
I did not invest in not as a VC.
Right, in yourself, of course, but I'm saying like as a VC, did you invest in Wilco?
As a VC, I did not invest in Wilco.
Okay.
You know, there was also this conflict of interest kind of thing, and I was about to leave the firm, so it never materialized. But we did raise a seed round pretty quickly after we all quit, so all good.
Well, that's good. And how was it like selling the initial idea? Because I feel like kind of, you know, getting, you know, okay, to me, right, when I'm just kind of hearing the big idea, it makes a lot of sense. But I'm not an engineer, right? And I imagine a lot of people you came to maybe understood the bigger idea, but when you kind of drill down to the specifics, they don't necessarily know because they're not engineers, right? Or they're not even necessarily technical people.
Yeah.
You know, how was it selling it then to these initial VCs, especially in the fact that you were able to get around so fast?
Well, it's a really interesting question because people think, you know, there's this notion of raising just based on a deck, right?
Okay.
People say, oh, they just raised based on a deck.
Sure.
They say it on a lot of companies.
Right.
But a deck is just a representation of what you've learned, right?
Okay.
And to get Wilco
you mean as the company? Like
as the company, okay. Yeah. And to get Wilco up and running, we did a lot of learning.
Okay.
And yes, we formed a deck to represent that.
Right.
But we spoke to so many engineering leaders.
Right.
You know, way before we even quit, just because we were running this thing on the side and we were, you know, super curious
right.
about this and what we want to do with it. So we spoke to so many engineering leaders and to so many engineers. And, you know, we all of this learning was, yes, put in the form of a deck.
Right,
but
right.
There was a lot into it. And then you pitch it to VCs and VCs are saying, all right, I'm going to also speak to engineering leaders and get their opinion on it and maybe connect you with some engineering leaders and listen in on the call and see what they think.
Kind of get like an audit from another professional.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And we already came in with a company that really liked us and was willing to start paying for the product.
Wow.
Even though it was just, you know, a hack together kind of product.
But it's okay, but you have like kind of some traction and you're getting like industry kind of a credibility, right?
Exactly.
You know? Okay.
Exactly. And, you know, all of these things make it easier to fundraise because you're getting real proof that you're building something real and something real that's needed.
Well, that's amazing then, because that's something that you're actually almost in a sense, maybe it's also from your past experience in startup world, but like seems like you really understood this kind of idea that I want to show that it's needed before I even go and try to get funding. Because at the end of the day, I know it's needed. My co-founders know it's needed. They're pushing me to get on it and I'm getting the deals in. So it's obviously kind of, it's almost like the proof is in the pudding, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So that's a very, I think, unique way of looking at it, especially as a founder. Because a lot of founders, you know, come at it and say, okay, how can I get the money to kind of go forward immediately, right? You know, without that type of stuff. And you're saying, no, I wanted to take the time to show the traction. Do you kind of regret that a little bit or?
No, I think that's the right approach.
Okay. Because I know it was also during Corona when you were having this, right? You know, when it was
going
out. So
yeah, it was during, but it was during the post COVID rush.
Okay.
It was easier to fundraise back then. But I think it was the right approach, and you know, it's not as if we took years to conduct research. I don't think that's the right approach either. I think that what you want to do is do the minimum required to show, you know, to prove your hypothesis and then come up with a new hypothesis and test that one, right? So our hypothesis was teams are willing to spend money on something that would give their engineers real practical experience.
Sure.
And we validated that hypothesis, raised the seed round, so we can, you know, get additional people and prove more hypothesis.
Interesting.
So I would still do it that way. And every round is very different, right?
Well, that's a very scientific way to start a building. I love it. You know, kind of prove the hypothesis, go to the next one, and just
exactly.
keep going down.
Well, I mean, when I tell it like that, it sounds very scientific, but, you know, my wife's a scientist, so okay. I see the scientific method in use. And what we're doing is still very, very different from that. So
sure.
yes, the,
okay,
the framework, the framework is scientific,
sure.
but you know, what we call validating the hypothesis is very different from what actual scientists looking for
yeah.
when they're looking for proof. And in their case, you can only invalidate an hypothesis. You can't really validate
sure.
when you're talking about real science. Anyway, so it's not as scientific as it sounds.
Sure.
But the framework is scientific.
Well, I like the methodology we can say
yeah.
you're kind of using. That's what
exactly.
that's what I like. You kind of framed it in this very nice box of like, you know, kind of the hypothesis proof, which I think is kind of something that a lot of people forget, you know? It's like, prove your problem is actually a problem. Don't just decide it is, right? You know? Now, I'm going to kind of change the focus a little bit of the discussion here, was is that when we were first talking a while back, you were bringing up the whole idea, and you even brought it up just now when we were first starting to talk, which is the whole diversity. Of development teams and engineering teams, right? And that you kind of say that, you know, Wilco is here to help support that. What does that mean? Because, you know, obviously, you know, bring women, bring minorities in, whatever it might be, you know, that's always a good initiative and it is a needed initiative. But what does it mean in terms of Wilco's role in that, which is just as a, you know, a platform at the end of the day?
It is just a platform, but it's not just a platform.
Okay, there we go.
So if you're coming from an underrepresented group,
sure,
you're probably coming in with an experience gap to begin with,
okay.
right?
Like in the sense that I didn't have the tools at my disposal to do whatever.
Exactly.
Okay.
Especially if you're talking about the average, right? The
sure.
average person from an underrepresented group is less experienced than the average person from represented group,
sure.
right?
100%.
And then you need to find your first job.
Okay.
And to find your first job, in many cases, you need experience.
Right.
Which is hard to come by.
Right. It's the never-ending loop of, you know, I don't know, employer death or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You know?
And it's a vicious cycle.
right.
And then you join a company, and then you see that everyone who's being promoted are the people from, you know, the usual suspect groups,
right? Okay.
right? Why? Because they already have experience,
right?
So even though from a management position, it might make sense for you to promote the people who are, you know, more experienced.
Right.
At the end, you're creating an environment where everyone who's a minority is not getting promoted or, you know, getting lower
right.
pay, et cetera, et cetera.
There's like an opportunities gap of some sort.
Exactly.
Okay.
So what we want to do is help close it.
Uh-huh.
You know, we are a commercial company and you know, we want to succeed in business first and foremost.
Right, you have goals.
We have goals,
right.
but we also believe in our ability to really aid that that problem, that experience gap that groups have. And, you know, your typical person from an underrepresented group is not going to get to the best team in the world.
Okay.
So yes, they're going to gain experience, but it's not going to help them close that experience gap.
Uh-huh.
Wilco might be able to do that.
And that's by kind of giving different modules to kind of work on and different simulations to kind of say, okay, look, I do have this skill. I do have this expertise. I can understand this development process.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, to give you an example, one group that's believed to be underrepresented in tech
uh-huh.
is actually the more mature population. There's, you know, talk of ageism.
Okay.
In
like
tech.
Third generation kind of people or people
even
who
less than that.
Okay.
You know, people like to say, I don't know if that's true
50s,
or not, but
60s.
People like to say that you don't see a lot of people in their 50s
uh-huh.
In tech. Now
really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. Okay, learn something new every day. You know,
I have my thoughts on you know why it's happening, but we'll not get into that. But
that's for the next episode.
That's for the next one. Yeah. But we did have someone who was already employed for over a decade, in sales.
Okay.
And wanted to switch to tech.
Okay.
So this person, you know, not old by any means, but starting late in their career. Is going to have a hard time
to make that jump,
right? And he actually did, and he tried, and he took up every online class he could find.
Really?
and he just couldn't pass any interview. And then he started playing on Wilco and completing quests.
Okay.
And within a few weeks was able to find a job. And not only find a job, he said that he knows what's expected of him now.
Okay.
I mean, what it's like to work in a team, what it's like to maintain a production system. So, you know, that's not your typical underrepresented group, but that's a person who was having a hard time with an experience gap.
Right.
And Wilco was able to close that for him and get him to start a job.
And did you guys give him like a Wilco certification? Kind of like, oh, he's Wilco certified, or how does it work?
So every person has their bragging page. We call it their portfolio page.
I like that.
And it shows every quest that you've played and every quest that you've built, if you've done that.
Okay.
And it links to your pull requests for every quest. And it shows the badges that you've earned, et cetera, et cetera.
So it kind of like helps. So basically, like, he just goes through his interview, says, hey, guys, look what I did. And they're like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Look, that's amazing if you think about it. Because what you're also saying is that, sure, maybe this specific guy is not your quote unquote, you know, minority, you know, diversity claim that you're trying to go for. But there is something real, which is showing that kind of the diversity in tech is not always just ethnic or cultural. It can be sometimes like you're coming from a different profession. You're coming from a different set of skills. And now you want to transfer over and you don't know. You don't know how to, because there's no playbook. There's no guide to tell you how to get there, right?
Exactly.
You know? That's amazing. Now, we are getting towards the end of the interview, and I want to kind of ask you a little bit. You know, we didn't get to cover every last topic that I wish I could with you, but I want to kind of ask, you know, in this world, obviously, that you see, you know, we could go into your entrepreneurial background a lot, but for you, you know, you see a lot of things changing in tech. You know, you probably see a lot of things about how people are coming over to tech and whatnot. What do you kind of see as some trends that need to be understood in the near future, you know, especially when it comes to the world of development?
I alluded to that earlier when I mentioned that AI is changing what it means to be a software engineer. So, you know, first came the no-code, low-code tools.
Sure.
And then everyone thought, oh, I could build systems.
Right.
And very quickly they realized, no, engineers can build systems. And even if it's no code, low code, you still need to design that system. You need to build it. You need to test it. You need to maintain it. And if you're not an engineer, you don't have those skills. And it's really hard. You know, at first that everyone thought, oh, marketers are going to use those tools. And most low code, no code platforms I'm seeing today are actually geared towards developers.
100%.
And then AI came along and said, you know, we'll write the code for you. Just tell us what you need. And developers today go to ChatGPT and get ChatGPT to write a chunk of code. And then they refine it using GitHub Copilot or something like that, right?
Right, of course.
So they've barely written any line of code on their own, yet their skills as engineers are needed to make it happen.
Okay.
Now, what it means in the future is you have a future where all of the skills of software engineering are required, except for writing code. But the interesting thing is that writing code is the skill that's driving people away. It's the skill that's scaring people away, right? You know, you hear people say, oh, I'm not good in math, so I'm not going to be an engineer.
For sure, for sure.
Or I can't deal with this code stuff.
Right. I can't sit at a computer all day and deal with this.
Oh, you're still going to sit at a computer all
day. Regardless.
And what if all of these people who are so scared of coding will actually become software engineers, because they're going to realize that the other skills are things that they can master, right? I can master building a system. I can master testing it, maintaining it. And then you'll actually get marketers who are software engineers. Software engineer might be an add-on to what you do.
As opposed to its job title now.
Exactly. Right. You know, it's the person on the team. You know, maybe there's a team of marketers and there's the person who's in charge of systems, and that person is a marketer, but has the skills of a software engineer. So I'm very curious to see what's going to become of all of this.
Brand new world right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel vindicated because I've been saying that, you know, code writing is not the most important skill for years now. And it's actually becoming that very rapidly. So
100%.
I think it's going to be an amazing future. I think AI, generative AI, is going to be what the spreadsheet was for accounting, where everyone thought that accountants are going to go away, but they actually became even more needed.
Just got better. Yeah.
They just got better and became more needed because they could do fancier stuff.
Sure.
And I think the same thing is going to happen with software engineering.
Well, I am interested to see if your prediction turns out. It, to me, it also, I have to be honest, seems like it's kind of headed there. But I guess we have to wait and see a little bit. So
all predictions false or your money back.
Right. There we go. You heard it right here, guys. Here's the prediction right now. So listen, Owen, I really wish you guys a lot of luck at Wilco. It sounds like you guys are up to some really, really cool stuff. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.